recording on? I can't tell.
Yes, it's on. Look at the button.
Oh, okay. Move. I am Professor Lionel Rockpool, and I'll be traveling to the Himalayas mountains to investigate the Yeti, or Abominable Snowman, or the various other names the locals call it. It's my belief that in America and Australia, it is extinct, but the Yeti could still reside here, or some other species closely connected to it. I have wondered whether it is some kind of Neanderthal or some other human ancestor, long forgotten, driven into the wilds by our Homo sapien ancestors, and... Oh, where is it? Coffee! Where is my coffee?
I irritably called out inside and waited for Rhea, my assistant, to get my coffee. I heard the kettle boiling and tapped my fingertips on the surface of the table, reached out and lifted my mug, taking several mouthfuls and letting the liquid trickle down my chin.
Oh, yes. I have come with a small team to assist me, although I have to admire they will likely hinder me.
I grumbled irritably. The help often tended to serve as more of a hindrance, but they are necessary.
Hey, boss man!
Brent is a loud, incompetent idiot who asks stupid questions and always comes in with a bright smile on his vapid face. The only good thing he is for is lifting heavy things, and for that, I suppose I should be grateful. He smacked my shoulder and pulled me into a bear hug.
Careful, don't spill my coffee.
Brent was oblivious to my concerns and flopped down on the couch behind me, that stupid grin on his face. I juggled the canister, scoffing, and finally managed to get a hold of it.
Rhea, where are the travel documents?
I called out.
In your folder, where I told you they were yesterday.
She retorted. No respect from any of them. I'm giving them the opportunity of a lifetime, to work with me. And here they treat me with such little reverence. Kids these days have no respect.
It would be easier if you kept it all online.
I wish I didn't need to fill quotas in order to receive funding, and even that was given hesitantly. But they will know.
I don't want it online. I want to be able to hold it in my hand.
I snapped, my eyebrows narrowing tightly as they stared at me. Not in fear, but I could have sworn they thought I was nothing but a silly old fool. I'll show them. I was going to show all of them they were wrong. She rolled her eyes at me.
I can always print it out. I have the list of food and the lodging leading up to...
Yes, yes, I'm recording. Be silent.
I snapped.
Anyway, where was I before I was rudely interrupted? Ah, yes. The Yeti has been said to become more active lately. Why? Well, I guess it could be anything. Climate change, population growth, there's so many things it could be. It's exciting that they're coming down closer to human settlements. Tomorrow, we will be traveling to the airport and begin our journey. We'll be meeting our guides when we're there. It's finally in motion. Good night. Rhea, how do I turn this off? Ah, a free moment. I'm currently on a plane and that dimwit Brent won't stop snoring. God, I wish he would choke and leave us in peace, but then I'd have to carry the weight.
I grumbled venomously.
We're currently on board the small plane to fly out to a remote village. I'd give you the name, but Rhea has fallen asleep. I'll be speaking to one of the elders to find out more information. We'll be getting our lodgings. Rhea will be handling all of that.
Finally, we got to our destination. A quaint yurt with hospitable locals, and in the shadow of the mountains, in the distance, you could see Mount Everest. Not that we were going that close to that death trap. We settled in easily enough with a welcoming tea. Our translator still had not arrived. I sat looking out at the mountains behind us with the tea while Brent and Rhea carried all the items inside. I decided to land in Nepal, and our interpreter, Mana, was a local to the village we're currently at. I'm looking over my notes, and one of the last reported sightings was in 2019 near Malacco. Unfortunately, they didn't approve our request to investigate the nearby area. Shame. I went with the next option, Russia, and due to unforeseen circumstances, my connections there fell through, and I had to skip it. Despite being decades out of date, I nearly gained a clearance in China to investigate. Unfortunately, it too fell through, so Nepal was the best option. Bhutan was another possibility. I could have gone to either the United States or to Australia to explore to find their variant, but no, only the Yeti will do, and I will find it. I decided on Pongbosch in the Aeron Valley is where we will be doing the bulk of our investigation. There will likely be other treks coming through. It'll be cold, but no snow, fortunately. We'll be stopping at a temple that they believe has a real Yeti hand. It could be a fake to lure in tourists, but I want to see it in the flesh. Perhaps there will be nothing but charlatans wanting extra coin from people. They won't be getting a single extra coin from me. I'd best get some rest.
Ah, hot God, woman!
I called out, struggling to take the warm thermos and turning on the recording.
I woke up to Rhea putting a warm coffee in my hand, and we have set off on our adventure. Brent won't shut up about anything.
Hey, boss man, when was the last time one of these Yetis were spotted here?
Well, fur and footprints have been found.
Yeah? Cool. Didn't answer my question. What were the findings?
Well,
I noticed a defensive tone in my voice.
It was said that the fur was actually bear fur, and the tracks may have also been bear.
The arrogant little prick was slowly raising an eyebrow at me. The sides of his mouth looked ready to smirk as his body trembled. Was he trying to stifle his laughter?
I
insisted.
I'm going to the source, eliminating possibilities, and I will not.
Brent nodded his head sarcastically, and he walked off with a laugh in the distance. That stupid brick-headed idiot will be eating his words by the time we are done. I know very well the Yeti sightings here can vary. My recorder started getting static. Mana warned me that sometimes the electrical equipment would falter and glitch this close to the mountains. Perhaps it was something to do with the magnetic fields.
Professor, calm down. I don't want you to get sick.
Rhea said, offering me a bowl of stew to eat, and I accepted it. Brent and Mana, our interpreter, were setting up the camp around me. It was nighttime, and we would begin our first night. I remember my first camp back when I was 20 years old. Sure, I had spent a considerable amount of time behind a desk and studying my materials. I clutched my walking stick, felt the pain in my ankles and knees, but being out in the open, mountain air was cleansing. It had been too long. I was finally going on an adventure once more. The decorated buildings stood with Buddhist symbols. They were led along a path toward the seated priest with an interpreter. I was excited. Sure, I first heard about this on some silly TV show with amateurs trying to find the Bigfoot. Rhea nudged me, reminding me to say namaste. We sat when offered, and I wanted so badly to look at the hand. It was larger than any man's, even the giant Neanderthal Brent's. I longed to touch it, but they kept it in a decorative box under lock and key. The bone was black, with pieces of fur still clinging to it, and it would have been a prize for any collector. Still, I couldn't take it now. In short, they refused for me to examine it, take it back with us, or anything useful. Instead, it must remain in the little box. Our small group made our way through the forest up the narrow mountain path. We were flanked on either side by the forest. Mana, the guide, led the way, followed by Rhea, then myself, and Brent was behind me. If anything comes up from behind, I hope they will take Brent.
Are you okay?
Professor, your tracks I found earlier. It's on the same path others were found. What do you think of them?
Were they recorded? I don't remember seeing anything in my notes.
Mana shrugged his shoulders casually.
Not everyone wants to talk about the Yeti and the foreigners to look for him. Do you believe in him? The Yeti is a respected figure, a sign of wisdom, whether he exists or not. I don't like the idea of the memory being used to amuse tourists.
Mana explained, a frown on his face.
Then why are you here with us?
I demanded sharply, irritated by his hypocrisy.
I need to support my family somehow.
Well, that added a somber mood to the adventure. We found them. I stood and watched while Rhea took a variety of photographs of the size and shape. It was over 30 centimeters in length, with 5 toes, and had traces of fur. Brent, with surprising skill, managed to pick up the pieces of fur with tweezers, placing it in small plastic bags and some in glass vials, all in an attempt to keep it from getting contaminated.
Ah, blast. Okay, it's on. The enormous footprints walked up in the distance, with most of them crushing grass, and it seems to understand how to conceal its tracks from people. My team is collecting evidence, under my supervision, of course, and Rhea, make sure your photo's from all angles. Brent, fill it up with plaster so we can get an outline.
I instructed, sipping my warm drink and looking up at the sky. The clouds were growing dark.
Hey, I was already doing it, boss man.
Brent happily called out, the sound of pouring of plaster loud.
Aye.
A muffled grumble, followed by a muffled whisper.
Look, Brent, you know I'm recording, and you address me as Professor.
Sure, boss. Sure, Professor.
The little prick looked like he was trying to stifle a laugh.
As I was saying, I think we're on the road to finding the Yeti this time. New technology. Admittedly, I don't know how to use most of it, but still.
Professor, we have measurements for the stride of the Yeti.
Rhea called out, still with the tape measure in hand, her notes tucked up under her arm.
I'm recording.
I snapped, then realized what I was doing.
Yes, very interesting.
I continued with more decorum.
We will be staying out here tonight. Prepare the camp.
I said with a clap of my hands, and nearly dropped the recorder on the ground. I fumbled, switched it off, and pretended nothing wrong happened. I went to sit down, looking out at the horizon, and waited for my team to set things up. The tent and the three campsites, one for cooking, one for food storage, and another for our sleeping tent. Everything to prevent bears from attacking, or so Brent says. I didn't offer to help, and watched them all work. It was getting dark, and I was sure I saw something creep around the forest around us. The birds were quiet, and the branches in the distance moved. Finally, I'd meet the Yeti I have searched so long for. I got up using my walking stick and headed to the cooking area, using the excuse of hunger to hide the fact that I didn't like being by myself out here. I sat down on an offered seat and was handed a bowl. Mana was solemn, quiet, and stared down into his bowl, not contributing to the conversation.
Where are we going tomorrow?
I think the boss man should go down to the river, check out potential water sources. We might even find some more tracks down there.
I don't know, maybe. I hope we find something so he doesn't blame us.
I wouldn't worry about it. He's more bite than bite.
Both Brent and Rhea stopped, looked in the nearby foliage, and seems to be looking out at something. They nearly caught me.
Day 3, and I wish I had brought a video recorder instead. I wish I could show you all the natural world. This place is rarely ventured, even by the nearby locals. They speak of a treaty they have with the Yeti, and an unspoken pact not to trespass or infringe on their rights. Hardly. I don't understand why they hold these beasts so highly, as fascinating as they are.
I could hear the sounds of their foolish, idle chatter outside. Grumbled and called out.
Be quiet. I need my rest for tomorrow.
They were quiet, then giggled, and I heard Brent call out.
Sorry, boss man. Have your old man sleep.
Why did they always have to try to disturb my recordings? I broke apart half a cookie, ate a couple of mouthfuls, and wrapped it up to place back in my backpack. Since I was comfortable grumbling to myself, I curled up in my sleeping bag and fell asleep. I heard footsteps around the tent, groaned loudly, rolled over, and tried to ignore it. I heard someone's hand move over the thick plastic of the top of my tent. I rolled over, turned my flashlight on, and the light lit up my tent.
Brent, go away!
I snapped, irritably. Seeing it move above my head was terrifying. Even more so was the large frame that moved, and my jaw dropped. It was too tall for Brent, too broad and muscular. I could see the thick fur, and it didn't move like a curious, upright bear. The Yeti in the flesh. It didn't move like a bear, and finally, I knew it wasn't for nothing. They were real. I heard the sound of movement in the camp and woke up to Brent's stupid, smiling face staring down at me.
Wakey, wakey, boss man. Food is cooked. We need to move before daytime.
I saw one, Brent.
I groaned at the sunlight, rubbing my eyes, too focused on the memory than his foolishness. I saw one last night. It came to my tent.
Sure. That's great.
The condescending little shit started and still held the tent flap open. I flicked my hand at him in order for him to take the hint and leave. Instead, he lingered near the opening, his gaze focused on something on the ground.
Oh, fuck.
Brent was studying something on the ground. He lifted his finger and appeared to be measuring something outside.
What?
I groaned, getting up, using my walking stick for support since Brent didn't offer to. I finally saw what he was looking at. As I suspected, there were footprints around the tent. They were longer than my forearm and stopped around the tent, and I noticed another set. These ones were smaller, more square-shaped, and had curled claws. Brent was standing, measuring them. He lowered himself down to get a closer look.
It looks like we were visited by a bear last night. I don't like how it came close, and...
I cut him off. No, it was a Bigfoot. Wait, the tracks are different. It looks like the Yeti drove it off. I pointed to the trails when Rhea and Mana came over. Rhea reached out and brushed the crumbs from my chest.
Were you eating while you were in this camp?
She asked. To be fair, I was, but I was hungry, and surely it would have been safer to have a little nibble in here than walking to get food late at night. I simply couldn't wait until morning. I brushed her off. It protected you, Mana said, next to Brent's, and pointed out how the tracks drove the bear away. Look, I made sure the bear was driven away. We all heard a distinct growling in the distance. We all looked into the forest. It was a lush green with hints of frost on the plant life. The bird life was quiet, and I knew something was wrong. Mentally, I knew I should reach for Rhea's camera, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. Brent lifted a rifle. While he was an idiot, he was also a decent shot and could act as a human shield if the need arose. We heard a roar, and a large bear approached. It roared loudly with sharp teeth and a wide jaw. It had deep scars along its sides and slowly walked toward us hungrily. From the left side, we heard grunts and hoots of warning. A Yeti, without weaponry, came out of the forest. He was enormous, and the bear stopped in its tracks. The pair were drawn into battle. It all happened so fast it was difficult to see, and the bear broke away to go near the tree line. There was a squeal. Something started to run toward us on all fours, loping and tried to grab hold of us.
Shoot! Shoot it!
I screamed, pointing at it. It let out a scream, then ran over to Rhea. It grabbed Rhea, trying to stand behind her, and tripped her over in the chaos. Brent lowered his rifle, unwilling to shoot her in the process, and I strode over, ripping it from his hands. In the distance, the bear and the Yeti battled with each other once more.
Shh, it's okay, Vivi,
Rhea called out. The creature, now with its arms wrapped around her, no doubt going toward her throat to tear it out. I pointed the rifle. I heard Mana scream something at me, and I shot. The gun let out a loud bang, and the creature struggled, falling down dead. Rhea's eyes were wide. I raised my chin, proud. I was a hero, and no doubt she would...
What have you done?
Rhea screeched at me. I didn't expect this. The creature was a long-limbed baby Yeti. It whimpered and looked up at me. Than at the others. The eyes were so innocent, a child's eyes, and I lowered the gun. Brent and Rhea tried to stop the bleeding, but the bullet got it straight in the chest. Soon, it let out the saddest little sigh and breathed its final breath. Rhea cuddled the corpse, her chest and face covered in blood. We were all quiet, and it was difficult to shake the feeling of guilt that lingered. I didn't want to kill a child. Even a Yeti spawn.
Oh, you killed it!
Rhea complained while holding it in her arms. I couldn't let her silly nonsense get in the way of studies. I didn't mean to, but this was an opportunity. one that will unlikely be repeated in the future. Brent, I need to conduct studies on it. Put it in the portable freezer. We need it to act as a specimen. I said, now wasn't the time, but an autopsy would be perfect to reveal more information about it. What sort of food it last ate, genetic information, and anything else we could use. Brent looked at me, as though I were some kind of monster. If only, at some point, a living Yeti could be found, and then my name will go down in the history books. The youngster's hand resembled a great ape's and a human's. If it didn't have the fur and the size, perhaps he would have mistaken it as a human child. We heard a long, woe-filled cry come from the forest, and the Yeti, coated in blood and wounds, limped out. It looked at each of us sadly, and wailed a beast-like sound at the sight of the baby. It came over, cradled the Yeti child in its arms, and lifted its head to hum or howl a sad song into the sky. I raised the rifle at the Yeti, only to have it smacked out of my hand by Brent.
"Don't you fucking dare!"
he whispered sharply at me. I couldn't let it actually attack us. Fortunately, it was already injured and limping, leaving a trail of blood behind it. The wounded Yeti left our camp.
"What did you do?"
Mana bellowed, looked at the infant, and pulled his hair in sheer frustration. He looked like an absolute madman.
Well, it was going to hurt Rhea, and I needed to put a stop to it. You could have frightened it off. It was scared. It came to where it thought it would be safe while the mother protected us. You didn't need to kill it. They will be hostile to us.
Don't be foolish. We have guns and things to protect us. Mana started to pack up his things, throwing it into his pack again and mumbled under his breath in Nepalese. Rhea and Brent looked at each other, then at Mana, and idly tried to keep themselves occupied. I sat, unwilling to allow their foolish power plays, and waited. If Mana left, then he wouldn't be paid for his services. I sat on one of the portable chairs, sipping my tea, and the condescension moved in the air. Surprisingly, he actually left. Brent said his footprints were down the mountain, and Rhea wanted to go check on him. Pah, no chance of that. He made his choice. There was still evidence to gather. The death of the Yeti spawn, or child, and Mana leaving the expedition has definitely brought down the spirits of Brent and Rhea. Not that they matter. I now have proof that no one can take from me. I noticed that Brent spent a majority of his time near the edge line of the forest, looking out and neglecting his work. It wasn't acceptable. The campsite needed to be maintained for our comfort. After one day, I had enough and went over to speak to him. I admit I was a little heated, and I was going to give him a piece of my mind.
"Have you noticed how quiet it is now?"
he asked, not bothering to look at me.
"What?"
I snapped at him. Still no respect.
"No birds, no wildlife, nothing. It's changed."
His usual idiot joking tone was gone. He was grim. Dark circles under his eyes suggested he hadn't slept, and something had him spooked. Not that it was my problem. I sighed. I knew I should have brought somebody else with me. "The forest changes. May I remind you that you're being paid to do a job?"
"Killing one wasn't what I signed up for."
I threw up my hands at his lack of vision. Did he not understand how our field operated? "We now have proof that they exist, and we're taking it back with us. The greenies and rights activists will make sure this land remains safe, I'm sure." I added dismissively, not sure and uncaring. "Now, go and collect some samples down by the river again," I instructed, handing him a bag of necessary items, and he walked down. Brent didn't protest this time. I had a feeling he wanted to be away from me. I watched him carry the bag down to the river, and he didn't show up at nighttime. Rhea kept wanting to go spend time with him, but they were spending too much time together already. Who knows what kind of things they were getting up to rather than working. We were analyzing the samples under a microscope, but she kept pouting and carrying on before I told her to go start cooking for us. The look she gave me. Brent didn't come back. As useless as he is, he does tend to show up. Rhea didn't go and do her task, and instead went to retrieve Brent. I just didn't expect her to be dragging his lifeless body back to camp. Something held him under the water, drowning him. His lungs were filled with water, and no doubt it would bring predators to us. He had blood and fur under his fingernails, no doubt trying to stop the Yeti from hurting him, and no doubt this was a warning. She dumped his body outside the tent. Why on earth would she bring it here?
Look, he's dead.
She panted, exhausted. I tried to think of the best thing to say. I was close to reaching my goal, one that I had spent a lifetime working on, and nothing would distract me.
Professor!
Rhea started, tears down her cheeks, and she reached for my arm. I looked down at it, and she slowly withdrew it.
We need to go. Brent deserves for his body to be buried, and we need to tell someone that Mana has gone missing. It's the right thing to do.
Her eyes were tear-stained, exhausted and gasping for air.
I can hear them whispering to me. I can hear the Yeti cry out at night, and then the silence during the day.
This again. Perhaps it was some kind of madness of dealing with death. I don't want to be that person, but not everyone is cut out for this line of work. Personally, I couldn't hear anything. Rhea, I can't hear anything. You must be going crazy up here. We'll go back soon, and Brent's body will be tended to. I didn't look up from my notes, hoping she would take the hint and leave.
But what about Mana? He could be stuck out here.
Nonsense. He's a local, and he knows his way back. Rhea went to the cooking area to cook our meals, and I asked her to tell me when the food was ready. She didn't even have the courtesy to acknowledge what I said. I kept recording. The tapes were becoming more full.
Autopsy report. I couldn't wait and needed to keep my mind occupied. The age of the deceased, I'm not sure. However, it is young, and it ran toward...
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Humans for safety. It was Brent, the late Brent's theory that the Yeti was trying to protect us from a bear. It also showed signs of grief for its offspring and may have ended up killing him. It turns out the contents of the young Yeti's stomach had a mixture of raw plant matter and traces of meat. Otherwise, it has milk teeth that you would expect with elongated canine teeth. I'm not sure what age they typically fall out, and...
My stomach let out a loud growl.
I'm not sure when they fall out, because...
It growled again, and I realized that Rhea hadn't bothered to come and get me.
For God's sake.
I grumbled, picking up my flashlight and started my way to the cooking tent. I have to do everything by myself. Can't get good help these days. I stomped over to the cooking tent, and I couldn't see any sign of her. The campfire was still going. Smoke rose from the charred food, and I wrapped a cloth around it to take it off. Where was the fire safety? I saw her laying down nearby. Rhea, now is not the time for a nap. I snapped and walked over to kick her boots when I noticed her expression. Her eyes were open, her neck twisted, and it looked like she had been placed gently. There was even a flower in her hair. Both of my employees were dead. This had to be Mana's doing, wanting to protect the Yeti, and I had to make my way down the mountain, then get to safety. I didn't care about abandoning my supplies. I needed to take my notes and my recordings and pieces of the remains of the Yeti with me as proof. I hurriedly packed my bag, moved at more speed than I thought it was possible, and puffed with every step. Once packed, I got my walking stick and made my way. I could hear those sounds in the distance and rushed. I wasn't going to let them take me. I didn't think I had it in me. I made the journey quicker than I expected.
Mana!
I was being dragged by my jacket, my walking stick long discarded through the forest, leaves rustling, and I could see their shadowy figures out of the corner of my eye. I never thought I'd see so many at once. Their ape-like growls were loud, and they ran on two legs in the same direction we were going. Finally, I was lifted onto a stone lap and gazed up at the night sky. My face was going numb. Only my eyes frantically moved around as trying to work out what happened, and my legs and arms flopped idly by my sides. I saw Mana, breathless and panting from the effort. He turned to look at someone. He bowed his head, then left me to my fate. I wheezed and tried to speak, for no sound came out. I breathed deeply and heard footsteps when a bearded face looked down at me. There was gray in his beard. He was coated in a thick layer of fur and was well-muscled. The heavy brow line narrowed at me, shook his head and grumbled words in his tongue.
"You found that,"
he said, his voice hoarse and deep.
"We have kept to ourselves as watchers of the mountains, and we save you only to have a youngling slain by your hand."
It pointed a large hand at me. It was difficult to understand him. I saw others who came too, and they held an arm and a leg each. They glared at me, their top lip curled upward, and I knew I would be dead now if it weren't for the leader. If only it had been one of the others, I could have recorded this as an example of their behavior.
"You weak leader, the young man and the woman. Both dead because of you."
He looked pained by this.
"No, please. I didn't know it was one of yours. Let me go."
My left leg was slowly being twisted. My hip eventually broke before it was yanked off, and soon the right followed. Twisted, then roughly pulled off. The strength they had. The pain was unimaginable. I screamed without holding back, pulling my arms, and nothing I could do would change anything. I could feel my body bleeding out.
"Mana, come back and help me. Don't let them kill me,"
I cried out loud. This wasn't how it was supposed to go. I learned my lesson. I hoped I would see or hear Mana returning, running toward me and telling them to stop. Instead, all I could see were the Yeti watching me closely. I could see intelligence and understanding in their faces. They knew the suffering they were doing to me. It was difficult to stay conscious with the amount of pain my body was in. The leader watched my reactions, as if it was actually studying me.
"It is fortunate for you. We are not like your kind."
He brought down a rock on my skull, and the last thing I heard was my skull being crushed.